Coming up, a company that prospers and practices the golden rule. No one gets laid off.
In our system, they come to work every day. Maybe they go home a little bit earlier, or maybe their paychecks are a little bit less, but they don't lose their dignity.
And a cartoonist whose work is spiritual practice.
You sit at the drawing table, it is a meditation and a prayer.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. At the Biennial General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church USA, delegates once again approved ordaining openly gay or lesbian clergy. The measure now goes to the presbyteries or local jurisdictions where previous General Assembly resolutions to ordain gays and lesbians have been rejected. The General Assembly also debated but did not pass a resolution that would have changed the definition of marriage from a union between a man and a woman to a union of two people. Meanwhile, a federal judge in Boston ruled unconstitutional the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. That act defined marriage as a union between a man and a woman. The judge said only states can define marriage. And since Massachusetts has legalized same-sex marriage, those couples deserve the same federal benefits as heterosexual couples, benefits such as Medicaid. In Hawaii, Governor Linda Lingle has vetoed legislation that would have legalized same-sex civil unions in her state. Lingle said the civil unions allowed by the law were too similar to gay marriage, which she opposes. The newly constituted Presidential Commission on Bioethics held its first meeting this week since Barack Obama became president. The first order of business, at the president's request, the pros and cons of synthetic life, which biologist Craig Venter announced last May he had created. Venter testified that the growing world population demands new ways to meet its growing needs.
All these different attempts, they all need to be successful in creating new sources of fuel and energy and food, or humanity will be irreversibly damaged and altered. So we are a society dependent on science now for our future.
Venter said the first benefits of the new technology might come as early as next year with synthetic flu vaccines. As the Justice Department filed a lawsuit to stop Arizona's controversial immigration law from taking effect later this month, faith communities around the country continue to protest the law. Religious leaders gathered in front of the White House to demand that Congress pass comprehensive immigration reform. And many clergy across the theological spectrum are using their weekly sermons to call for a new approach to immigration. Thousands of Muslims gathered in Chicago this week for the annual meeting of the Islamic Society of North America. The convention stressed the themes of compassion and mercy, and also considered relations with other religions and President Obama's outreach to the Muslim world. Speakers also discussed the need to combat religious extremism within Islam, which, as one speaker put it, takes a beautiful religion and makes it ugly. With spilled oil now reaching all the Gulf states, the White House this week demanded more answers from BP about its cleanup efforts. Meanwhile, a prominent ethicist is calling for a much deeper national discussion about the moral implications of the spill. Kim Lawton reports.
It's an ecological tragedy, it's an economic tragedy, it's a political tragedy, and it's an ethical tragedy. Given that that is the case, what is the ethical response?
Paul Root-Wolpe directs Emory University's Center for Ethics. He says because American dependence on oil is partly responsible for the crisis, it needs to be addressed in the responses as well.
one basic ethical issue is, as we criticize BP or as we criticize other responses to this, we have to look to ourselves and ask ourselves, what are our contributions to this crisis? The second issue is, how are we going to balance our dedication to the environment, to our need for comfort?
Wolpe says scenes from the Gulf should force Americans to seriously reconsider their use of oil and the need to make greater lifestyle sacrifices. Also, he says, to seek other sources of energy. But Wolpe says that conversation is not taking place on a broad enough scale.
The responses have been primarily economic and political, and they're very important. But that economic and political response has to be tempered by a question of, what are the values we're pursuing in those response? That's where ethics comes in. Ethics precedes your economic and political judgments because it clarifies the values by which you should make those decisions.
And without that discussion, he says tragedies like the Gulf disaster will continue to happen. I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
With unemployment exceeding 9% and with no guarantee that lost jobs will ever be filled, there's a company in Cleveland that believes no one who's doing a good job should lose it. Phil Jones reports on Lincoln Electric, prospering in good times and bad by following the golden rule.
Welding builds America. I mean, what's interesting is if you look around the slides and you see the various different industries.
Lincoln Electric is the world's leading developer and manufacturer of arc welding equipment. It has rigorous performance standards. There is mandatory overtime, no unions, and virtually no paid sick days. So why would anyone want to work here?
What's the biggest bonus you ever got at the end of the year?
I guess I could tell you.
More gross
bonus?
Yeah.
My biggest was about $28,000.
I don't know all their ins and outs. But I know this, I feel solid and confident that this place will be here and that I'm going to have a job till I retire.
That is because Lincoln's employees don't have to worry about this happening to them.
You and I are sitting here today because this will be your last week of employment at this company.
Why me?
What am I supposed to do now?
Am I supposed to feel better that I'm not the only one losing my job?
This is ridiculous. I have been a fine employee for over 10 years, and this is the way you treat me.
Over the past 20 and 30 years, we've come to understand how horribly destructive layoffs are for the workers involved, for their families, and for the communities at large.
Journalist Frank Coller has written a book about Lincoln Electric's unusual management tradition.
Lincoln believes that it is not only possible to protect people as well as profits, but that in fact, over the long term, the best way to protect your profits is to protect people.
When somebody loses their job and they're sitting at home every day, I think they lose a good part of their dignity that's associated with that. In our system, they come to work every day. Maybe they go home a little bit earlier, or maybe their paychecks are a little bit less, but they don't lose their dignity.
In 1895, after being laid off from his manufacturing job, John Lincoln decided to start his own company. He later brought in his brother James to manage things. When the Depression hit, Lincoln Electric suffered along with everyone else. Desperate to keep their jobs, workers went to James with this proposal.
If we promise to work harder, and we in fact can improve the productivity of the company, will you share the benefits at the end of the year with us in a fair manner? And James Lincoln actually directly said yes.
The profit sharing, which began in 1934, has continued to this day. The Lincoln brothers were encouraged to have high moral standards by their father, an itinerant minister.
He preached so much the Sermon on the Mount and the golden rule of doing unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Over his career, J.F., as he was known, wrote frequently of his moral principles. If we follow the philosophy of Christ, we shall have the proper answer to the problem of layoffs. When we treat the worker as we would like to be treated, the answer is plain. Continuous employment is needed to secure the cooperation of the worker. It is also basically sound.
The thing that I always talk about, and we've used this term before, is this brain drain that comes when you just let people go. We keep this young talent that we work so hard to bring into the organization. They know we're not going to desert them in the bad cycle, and they become more and more committed as far as the company is concerned.
Under the guaranteed employment policy, no one at Lincoln has been laid off for economic reasons for more than 60 years.
If you are a full-time employee for 3 consecutive years, the company will guarantee you 75% of a normal work week of work and compensation in good times or bad.
Okay, a little bit about the bonus.
In 2008, business was especially good. The company paid out the highest bonuses in its history, more than $28,000 per employee.
Congratulations, you earned it.
But there was a warning.
I referred to comments that J.F. Lincoln had made when the bonus system started and cautioned people that 2009 would be a difficult year, and be sure that they took a good portion of their bonus home and saved it for the rainy day that we knew was coming.
In 2009, those hard times hit. To survive, Lincoln reduced the work week from about 50 hours to 32. Some people were moved to jobs that paid less, and there was an across-the-board salary cut. Also, a voluntary retirement plan. About 300 accepted, 10% of the workforce. At the end of a very difficult year, Lincoln had ended up with a profit.
And employees got bonuses averaging $17,000. But part of what determines those bonuses is the company policy of, with few exceptions, no paid sick days.
Look, you're being paid when you're working. And the company is successful when you're working, not when you're home. And it's with the bonus system, the way it's structured, it's difficult for an equal sharing of the bonus if you don't have equal participation on the part of the workers.
Workers don't get a paycheck just for showing up. Through a complicated merit system, employees know whether they're performing up to standards. If they're not, and if they've been at Lincoln less than 3 years, they can be terminated.
We separated the high performers from the low performers. We began to meet with the low performers, let them know what we needed them to do in order for them to survive the crisis that were coming. And those that reacted positively made it, and those that didn't were let go based on performance standards.
The concept of pay based on quality piecework was started by James Lincoln in 1914. At other companies, piecework has been controversial. But not here.
Are you a top producer here?
I think so.
Why do you like to be on piecework?
It's the incentive of knowing that I'm doing the job and I get paid at the end of the day for what I've done and to make a quality part.
Why do you like to work under piecework?
Piecework, it gives you a chance to, you're not limited. Your hands are not tied. You're not limited on the amount of earnings you can make.
No union.
No union in this factory. There's never been a union in our Cleveland company.
And why is that?
I think because people feel they've been treated fairly and they've had every bit as good or better opportunity than any union opportunity could provide them.
Another Lincoln policy, creation of an advisory board made up of representatives from all departments. It meets with management every 2 to 3 weeks. And any employee can have one-on-one access to the CEO just by making an appointment.
I have a picture of J.F. Lincoln up over my desk, and when I see that picture when I walk in the morning, I recognize a responsibility to kind of adhere to the ideals of which he set out to run this company by.
Lincoln is successful by any metric that you can use on Wall Street. The stock does well over the long term. The company's made a profit every year from 1934. So there's no question that in the business world, Lincoln Electric is a success. The difference is that Lincoln Electric is also a success by any other measure that most of us as ordinary people would see as the right thing for a company to do.
So why aren't more companies emulating Lincoln Electric? One reason, Lincoln policies are viewed in business schools and on Wall Street as inefficient.
Certainly on Wall Street, the perception is that any kind of a guarantee for workers of any kind is a direct threat for shareholders.
Lincoln Electric does not presume to be a model for other companies, saying simply, this is what works for us, but it's not easy.
The companies have three stakeholders. They have their customers, they have their employees, and they have their shareholders. And which of those three stakeholders don't want to be treated fairly? Treat people fairly, treat people like you'd like to be treated.
The golden rule.
The golden rule.
Instead of laying people off in the current recession, Lincoln reassigned some of them to product development. As a result, the company has brought out more than 100 new products. As one former CEO puts it, when things pick up, I wouldn't want to be a competitor of Lincoln Electric. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Phil Jones in Cleveland, Ohio.
In other news, in Iraq, a series of bombings aimed at Shiite pilgrims killed more than 50 people. The attacks occurred in Baghdad as hundreds of thousands participated in an annual procession to honor an 8th-century imam. In the past, Shiite pilgrims have been targeted by Sunni extremists during this event. Cuba agreed to release 52 political prisoners it's been holding since 2003. The Catholic Church lobbied hard for their freedom. The Archbishop of Havana made the announcement after a meeting with President Raul Castro. The prisoners include political opponents, organizers, and journalists. They've been charged with conspiring with the U.S. government to destabilize Cuba's political system. They're being released over a period of months and will be allowed to leave the country. The Dalai Lama celebrated his 75th birthday this week. He's been living in northern India in the town of Dharamsala since 1959, when he fled Chinese communist rule in Tibet. The Dalai Lama said his study of Buddhism continues to give him, quote, strength, peace, happiness, and good health. We have a story now with echoes of Buddhist teaching. It's about Patrick McDonnell, an American cartoonist who loves silence and slowing down and who sees the animals he draws as models for how to live in the present moment, the now. McDonnell's drawings have filled more than 20 books, most recently a collaboration with the author and spiritual teacher Eckhart Tolle. Bob Faugh tells McDonnell's story.
With a few deft strokes, one line here, another there, the figures almost magically come to life. A dog, Earl, or a cat, Mooch, appearing in the comic strip Mutt since 1994 and now syndicated in more than 700 newspapers in 20 countries. Since he could hold a crayon, Patrick McDonnell has been drawing cartoons and so much more. Every morning, he is up around 5:30 or 6 with his cat, Meemaw. Before he sits down to create, McDonnell reads something spiritual.
Reminds me what's important, and especially in doing the comic strip. And I try to be funny and everything, but I always try to think of a higher purpose, and, you know, how I can serve the world a little bit with my comic. Cartoons help slow you down, which is a big part of the message, to slow down.
The world of all those characters mirrors his own world in Edison, New Jersey. 1 acre of tranquility, where deer often graze and a cat sleeps on a nearby windowsill. Reminders, says McDonnell, of this stillness all around, and that true happiness is found in simple things.
You know, right now our cat is just purring and sleeping in the sunlight. I think it's finding that, you know, life is stillness. When we are with our cat and dog, we kind of let go of our troubles and ourselves and just become like them, which is like being happy in the present.
For 19 years, McDonnell observed those moments of stillness, that celebration of life,
with his Jack Russell Terrier Earl, the inspiration for Mutts. Now, he tries to do the same thing with his new dog, Amelie.
When I play ball with my dog, every once in a while I'll throw the ball horrible. And I think if I was with a person and I threw the ball horrible, they'd probably say, well, come on, the dog doesn't care. He just goes after the ball and is happy to come back, So that's a big lesson to learn.
It's the simplest, truest things, McDonald says, which we could learn from animals if only we would let them be our guardians of being.
I think cats and dogs are in the moment. And I think they give us that gift. I think if you have a cat on your lap that's purring, it's hard to think about all the troubles in the world and in your own life. You really could just relax and let go and be in the now.
It's a mindset which infuses McDonald's comic strips and his books, one he recently did with the spiritual teacher and best-selling author Eckhart Tolle.
Like millions of other people, I was immediately taken with his work. With a cartoonist, you only have 3 panels. You have to get to the point. And I felt like he really got to the core of spirituality and just being in the present moment. So it really influenced my work and influenced my life.
Patrick saw a photo of Tolle with his dog Maya and decided to contact him about collaborating on a book.
In Eckhart's work, he talks a lot about nature bringing us to stillness. And Mutts is about how our dog and cat can help us do that. I mean, I felt the instant connection with his work. My wife and I went through a lot of his recordings and his books, and anytime he mentioned a dog or a cat, we took out that little quote and we paired him up the best we could with some of my comics.
For example, when Tolle wrote In the Now,
I had Earl and Mooch talking about trying to live in the now and made a little gag out of it.
Or when Tolle wrote that he's, quote, met several Zen masters and they all happen to be cats.
I did have a strip where Mooch is sitting on his little bed and purring and meditating away and kind of just disappears. And all that's left is the purr.
In whatever McDonald draws, wisdom is much the same. Take his picture book, Just Like Heaven, where Mooch falls asleep and thinks he died and went to heaven.
And then he goes around and sees all the things that he's lived with his whole life, but he sort of sees them through new eyes now because, wow, this is heaven. So, I think the point of that book is, probably back to the stillness.
Living in the present moment, that's where heaven is.
Yeah.
That's your message.
That was the message of that book, yeah.
The spiritualism of Tolle and the cartoon genius of McDonald can be distilled in just 3, sometimes even 1, small panel.
To me, that's the magic of it. You can say so much with so little.
I'm afraid to open my eyes. I'm afraid yesterday was all a dream, and I'll wake up and still be in the shelter.
Captured recently, too, in this public service announcement, which McDonald helped create for the Humane Society of the United States, where he sits on the board. Whether in an animated version, the so-called funny papers, or even hardback, there is something in McDonald's simple drawings which deals with what matters most.
It's what's underneath the strip. I mean, like Peanuts, I feel like Peanuts had that same spirituality, but it wasn't hitting you over the head with it.
These are your words now. Spirituality is integral to both my life and my work.
I think that's why we're here, and the most important thing when you sit at the drawing table, it is the meditation. Yeah, and a prayer, sort of a little prayer to when you do these little comics, they're like little prayers to the universe. I just think God is everywhere. I think we're living in church. Nature's church.
Finding in the life around him what McDonald tries to put in comic form, what Eckhart Tolle calls a spark of the divine.
If we just saw all life as one and all beings as a spark of the divine, I think all the problems go away. There's just this peaceful stillness all around us that we're not paying attention to.
Which Patrick McDonald is trying to change through comics, his little prayers to the universe, reminding us to slow down and live better. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Bob Faw in Edison, New Jersey.
And finally, Pope Benedict XVI, like many this week, is trying to escape the July heat. The Pope left Rome on Wednesday and traveled to Castel Gandolfo, the papal villa in the hills just south of the city, where he'll stay for the rest of the month. As the Pope prepared for his vacation, the Vatican issued a statement urging other vacationing Catholics to respect nature during their summer travels. They were reminded that creation is God's handiwork. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. There's much more on our website, including more of Kim Lawton's interview about the Gulf oil spill with ethicist Paul Wolpe. You can comment on all of our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. And you can always follow us on our Facebook page. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, music from the Islamic Society of North America's annual conference.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Be More, PBS.